Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Relax with Animal Facts. I am Steph Wolf, and today I am going to be learning with you about our furry, scaly, or possibly even slimy friends. And in today's case, it is definitely going to be a furry friend of ours, because we are covering the oh-so-wonderful dwarf mongoose. This, of course, is a very special listener episode dedicated to Alex, Nessie, and Kelsey. Thank you so much for taking the time to write in, and I hope you enjoy your very own episode. If you would like to help support the show's mission while getting exclusive content, including ad and intro-free versions of the episodes, and an exclusive episode every week, you can go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts, or you can click the Patreon link in the description. A huge shout out to George Vlad for the ambiance used in today's episode. His work is linked in the description, and you should check him out. And now, let us begin to wind down a little bit. If you are new here, I would like to welcome you to the Animal Podcast family with open arms, which is a family that has members all around the world. We all get to meet together to go on adventures. If you are returning, you know exactly what I am going to be asking of you. I have three primary exhortations for you. The first is that you put on a pair of boots. We are certainly going to be needing those for where we are going today. My second exhortation is that you realize perhaps where you are carrying some tension. Is it in the head, in the neck, in the shoulders, maybe even in the arms or legs? Regardless of where your tension is, my encouragement to you is the same. Do your best to relax whatever it is that you are tensing, and you can even bring up in your mind a flavor or color of Jell-O that you like, and do your best Oscar award-winning impression of it. Really, go for the gusto here. It might also be the case that you don't know where you carry tension. If that's the case, you can start from the bottom of your feet in your mind and just slowly scan up your body, relaxing as you go. So you would start first with relaxing the feet, then the calves, then the quads and the hamstrings, and so on. My final exhortation to you is that you give your mind permission to wander and journey with me into a savanna in Ethiopia, where the dwarf mongoose resides. Here we are again in Africa, a place so rich in biodiversity that it can make your head spin. The sounds alone here attest to this fact. We can hear that the natural orchestra has thousands of distinct players, some in soprano, others in tenor, some on strings, and even others on percussion. But we're not just here to admire the soundscape of this wonderful place, we're looking to admire the dwarf mongoose. This creature is Africa's smallest carnivore, but despite their little size, they have quite the personality. They are highly curious and gregarious animals, much like their meerkat cousins. The dwarf mongoose, or the common dwarf mongoose, are its common names. Its scientific name is Helogale parvula. This is a scientific name that, like nearly every single one we have covered, has quite the Latin and Greek ancestry. Hellogale is a combination of two Greek roots, marsh and weasel, while parvola is the Latin word for small or tiny. So just from their scientific name, we learn that this is a creature that is a small marsh weasel. This captures both its size and its habitat. Now, there are many different mongoose species, but the dwarf mongoose is the smallest of the bunch. It measures in at around 7 to 11 inches, about 18 to 28 centimeters from snout to tail. It has short ears, a pointed muzzle, and a long, fluffy tail. It is also equipped with quite the pair of teeth that is tailored specifically for their insect-based diet. Different dwarf mongoose, I'm not sure actually what the plural is here, but different individuals in the dwarf mongoose species can have a variety of fur colors, changing from a reddish buff to a mottled brown color. But their fur coat is as smooth and lustrous as they come. They are also equipped with darker tails and darker lower limbs. And while we are here in Ethiopia, we could have been in a few places. I have chosen for our adventure today to go into an Ethiopian savanna rather than any other because they are native to this area. They also happen to be native to Somalia, as well as South Africa and Namibia. In general, they will be found in forests, savannas, and different sorts of scrubby areas. They can be found in a variety of elevations, ranging from sea level to 5,900 feet. They will prefer places that have some coverage, so dense foliage, rock crevices, termite mounds, things like this. Here in the wild, they can live for up to 18 years. Remember that in the wild, there are a ton of circumstances that can determine how long a particular creature lives. The amount of predators, their general environment, and in the case of this mongoose, they have to deal with a variety of birds of prey, snakes, other large birds and mammals, which of course affects how long they live on average. The dwarf mongoose is the most common small carnivore in Africa. In terms of their behavior, they are diurnal. This means that they are active during the daytime and will choose to sleep at night. It will spend its days running around in search of food with its pack. In the woods, however, they are most commonly found preying on small animals and insects. Those who are not foraging for food are probably caring for the young mongooses inside the den, or grooming or playing with each other. These carnivores hunt largely on insects, but keep in mind that they have also been observed eating rodents, reptiles, eggs, and even on occasion, fruit. These carnivores like to mix it up sometimes. They spend most of their day looking for food hidden between rocks, bushes, leaves, and just about every other hiding place you can name. We learned earlier that they often travel in groups, and so they do. The number of individuals in these groups can range from 3 to 30, and everything from territorial defense to puppy raising is done as a team. This collaborative approach to living has resulted in a complex social structure and hierarchy regulated by fascinating community rules and riddled with all kinds of nuance. And I think that this whole group dynamic is one of the most interesting things about the dwarf mongoose. So let's spend a little bit of time here first. A huge lesson for dwarf mongoose puppies is to maintain good relationships with their neighbors. These are group creatures after all, but they don't only maintain a good relationship within their groups, but also with other animals. Take, for example, their interesting mutualistic interactions with hornbills. Hornbills may scoop up insects disturbed by foraging mongooses while offering additional security with their alert eyes. Hornbills also have quite a bit higher of a vantage point. The dwarf mongoose is pretty low to the ground. This friendship ends up being so advantageous to both sides that they will even wait for the other's arrival before they embark on their day. Dwarf mongooses will also engage in a variety of cooperative behaviors. One example of this is an individual serving as the group's lookout. An individual will intentionally miss their opportunities to forage and to feed in order to secure the safety of their group. It also takes a pretty high level of trust from the rest of them, because if the sentinel or the guard is not being very attentive, it could mean a sudden danger from any direction. According to some research, new entrants into the groups are perceived as less trustworthy as sentinels. They can be perceived this way for quite a long time, about 5 months or so. After that 5 month period, they are bestowed a greater level of trust than when they just came in. It is the dominant males and females that tend to be regarded as the most trustworthy sentinels. One might ask, what is in it for this sentinel? They miss out on their own feeding to be a lookout, but experts have found that it is a well-rewarded task. It is just rewarded later, at around sunset. Just before they retreat underground for the night, the group members will meet at the entrance to their chosen burrow and begin grooming each other. Animals that served as sentinels each day were rewarded with affirming grooming during these socialization times. This behavior is known as allo-grooming. It is something that strengthens social ties and reduces anxiety. But because these sentinels get this preferential treatment during this behavior, it implies that dwarf mongooses are not only aware of who is doing the work, but are also capable of remembering that information throughout the day. It might have been many hours from the last time a sentinel worked, so for them to remember that bit of information is pretty cool. There have even been recorded instances when troublemakers who would create aggressive encounters are mocked and punished at the end of the day. So the way that dwarf mongooses deal with bullying is to largely ignore them. One can see already that the dwarf mongoose is a remarkably communicative creature. We've learned a lot about their non-verbal behaviors, but what about their verbal? These animals, to say the least, are extremely vocal. They will use a mix of twitters and trills, whistles and vibrations. There are different noises for different contexts, some for mating, some for the sentinel, another for a defensive posture. It suffices to say, this creature is a chatty one. The hierarchy within the pack is quite an interesting one, in my opinion, because there is a reverse age hierarchy, where the younger mongooses will rank higher than the senior ones. This fact might seem unintuitive, but it is likely done in order to guarantee that the smaller mongooses have enough food and are not competing with the older ones. And because they are younger, they will most likely just win. The dwarf mongoose groups are led by a dominant couple, typically consisting of the eldest male and female. and it is only this dominant couple that has a guarantee of having offspring. The remainder of the group, which can be made up of both related and unrelated individuals, is dedicated to preserving the pups every season. This might be defending the den or babysitting, maybe even teaching them essential hunting skills. The fact of the matter is, dwarf mongooses care a lot about their groups. It is also worth mentioning here that there are two kinds of dwarf mongooses. Because we are here in Ethiopia, we will have a bit of an overlap. There is the common dwarf mongoose, which is the animal we are learning about right now, and there is also the Ethiopian dwarf mongoose found in this area. So, while there are many similarities between the two species, they are still distinct. Another defense system that they have in place, apart from having watchdogs or watch dwarf mongooses, is a natural resiliency to snake venom. Like a few other creatures, the dwarf mongoose has a certain resilience. Some call it an immunity to snake venom, but I prefer to be precise and say resilience or resistance. This is because while they have a pretty impressive resistance to snake venom, it does not provide them complete immunity. Leave the extraordinary amounts of resilience or immunity to a creature like the honey badger. Pups are born during the rainy season when insect prey is abundant. Successful groups of the dwarf mongoose can produce multiple successive litters of 4 to 6 pups per year. It is not exactly the safest environment that these microscopic pups are born into. Strictly speaking, they are not microscopic, but they certainly are very small. While they are born with a little bit of protection of their termite mound burrow, it does not ensure their survival. Snakes pose an ongoing hazard to small babies, thus den-bound babies are left with babysitters. It is a little bit later into maturity when resilience to snake venom makes a little more sense. So while some members of the group are left babysitting, others will go forage. If a snake is sighted, these babysitters will do a couple of things. They will first raise the alarm and let all the other dwarf mongooses know what is going on, and they will also mob and distract the snake while transporting the puppies to safety. Depending on the snake and the amount of venom, they can take a bite and live. The little puppies, however, cannot. But when the pups finally emerge from their dens, they find themselves in a world full of opportunities to learn and to explore. They will quickly start to nibble and to wrestle, ask for food, and also perform another important aspect of their communicative system, scent marking. Dwarf mongooses have scent glands located beneath their tails. They will try to mark things as high above the ground as possible, about at nose level for the receiver, and because they like to scent mark so high, and also because they have very small legs, they can be seen doing awesome handstands and amazing wiggles as well. This is a rite of passage almost for many growing pups. And as they grow, they basically have two options. They can wait and wait for a shot at the top of the hierarchy, or they can disperse, locate another group with better prospects, and join them. Both the male and female dwarf mongooses disperse, but males are statistically more prone to do so. And now, let us move on to the name of the animal. Mongoose. The word mongoose was coined in the 1690s, perhaps from Portuguese, but likely ultimately from Dravidian. The form of our modern English word has been altered by folk etymology. All of this comes down to a probability we don't know for certain, but there are certainly similarities in languages like Telugu, Canarese, Tamil, so that is super cool. And now, let me tell you a dad joke. Check this out. I just want to credit the person. This was posted by Jay Safer on Reddit, so let us check out what Jay Safer had to say. A zookeeper lost a pair of mongoose to a storm and needed to replace them. He began writing an email to his supplier. "Dear sir, please send me 2 mongooses at once." That didn't sound right, he thought, and so he tried again. "Dear sir, please send me 2 mongoose at once." That still didn't sound right, so he gave it one last try. "Dear sir, please send me 1 mongoose, and while you're at it, send me another mongoose." This is more just clever and funny. I don't know about you, but I didn't get any goosebumps that normal dad jokes usually provoke in me. My spirit seems to be intact. My heart is not crushed. So I am not sure if this strictly qualifies as a dad joke, but I still really like it. And now I'm going to be answering many of your questions, because this is season 8. And every season, we have a little tradition where you can ask me a ton of questions, and I'll try to answer as many as possible. This is so you can better get to know me as a host. After all, we're going on all these adventures together. It only figures you know a little bit about me. The first set of questions are coming from Spotify. I couldn't choose all of them, it would certainly just be a whole episode, so I just chose some at random. Potato Forever asks, "Is your real name Steph Wolf?" This might be a shock to a lot of you, but no. My last name is insanely long. I am Eastern European, and so it figures. Anadil Valentine asks, in a similar fashion, "Did you decide to do the podcast because your last name was Wolf? Thanks." Knowing the answer to the previous question, this answer is obviously no. The reason I chose Wolf was actually because I used it as an alias when I was younger. When I would be on MSN or other sorts of things, I just thought the word Wolf was cool. It also happens to be an animal, but just spelt a little differently. So I figured to bring back my childhood alias and use it as my name on the show. I quite like it, and all of you seem to like it too. I am basically Steph Wolf at this point. Luke M. asks, "How many episodes are you going to do in all?" Well, there are over 2 million known species of animals, so conservative estimate, 2 million. Anna Shree asks, "Do you have a pet? If so, what's its name? Do tell." I have a golden doodle named Molly. Another listener, Anne, I believe it was, asked if Molly likes to listen to the show, and I think the answer is no. All she ever wants to do is play tug of war or chase a ball. I don't think she wants to listen to me very much. 1234 asks, "How do you keep up with the podcast?" The answer is a lot of time management. I have recently started working with an editor so that we can do 2 episodes a week instead of 1. But in summation, good time management and coffee. Aaron asks, "Where did your passion for animals and the idea for this show stem from?" To the former part of your question, I have always found animals fascinating, and one particular aspect of them. From the smallest organisms to the largest, I was always just struck how animals knew what to do. Even cells in our body. How is it that they come into being and then know what function to perform? Just like a creature might not have to be taught that they have to scratch at bark and put a stick inside, just like how creatures often don't need to learn the behaviors they instinctively perform, that kind of visceral or intuitive memory that they have, I'm not sure what to call it, but that has always been at the forefront of my fascination with animals. As to where this idea for the show came from, it just came to me as I was in a college class. I thought a podcast would be cool. I like to talk. I think it might be hard to find people who want to listen, but I resolved to make one about animals, and then relax with animal facts came to my mind. It rhymed, and that was enough for me. Let's switch to Instagram. The Red Baron asks, what do you look like? I look like a 26-year-old man, but I guess I look like whatever you want me to look like. I have decided to mostly stay physically anonymous, though I don't know if that will be possible in the future. So maybe you guys will find out what I look like if I am doing something in person. But until that point, I am trying to keep the spotlight off of me and more on the animals and you guys. Kalon or Chalon Silver Girl asks, what is your biggest pet peeve? I think for this, bar none, is interrupting. But interestingly enough, not with myself. What I mean is, if I'm in a conversation and someone continuously interrupts me, I don't actually mind very much. I won't try to have a deep discussion, but I won't get angry or anything. If somebody just likes to talk about themselves, for example, and will just interrupt constantly, I can play along, I don't mind. It's more when somebody else is being interrupted, like if they are trying to contribute to a conversation and one person interrupts them like 8 words deep into their sentence. There have been times where I just put my hand on their arm and say, bro, you just can't be doing that. I like to hear what people have to say, so when somebody else gets interrupted, I am not at all pleased. So the interruption of others when contributing to a conversation is my biggest pet peeve, bar none. Skilazar asks, are you scared of any animal? Well, the answer is, in one way, of course. I have a natural fear of probably more animals than I can count. But I am using fear here maybe as a sort of respect. There is no chance that I would have zero fear if I were to run into an elephant, a gorilla, a bison, a lion, a killer whale, or even a giant squid in the wild. Many animals just instantly demand from me a visceral kind of respect or fear. But if by scared you mean something like an arachnophobia where I can barely stand to even look at pictures of them, I would say no. Lizzie asks, if you could have an exotic pet, what would you get? Now, I would use the term ownership here very loosely. Basically, if I lived someplace where an elephant could just stop by once in a while, that would be great. That would be my form of an exotic pet. I'd be chilling outside reading when Eeyore, my elephant friend, would come. I know that's supposed to be a donkey, but I like it as an elephant's name too. Me and Eeyore could just chill, have some water, maybe paint together, throw a ball around, all that good stuff. Those are all the questions that I'm going to be answering today. I believe that's more than 10, but we will do another one in the future for all of your other questions. Thank you all so much for taking the time to send those in. Now let me move to the review of the episode. This one comes from PallidBat1000, who is writing all the way from the United States of America, quite a ways away from Ethiopia. Pallid has actually took upon him or herself to write this dad joke for me. Pallid writes, "One Hyrax says to the other, 'Would you like to go to the opera with me?' The second one says, 'Nah, I'm more of a rock Hyrax myself. Your podcast is the best. Love, Pallid Bat.'" See, Pallid, your joke is too good. My hairs are not standing on end. That being said, good job. I'll give one more piece of information about me that was not asked, but I love the opera. In fact, I'm going to a show very soon. If you have never been to an opera before, do yourself a favor and just try it once. If you don't like it, fine. But take it from me, who listened to only old school hip hop for more than 10 years, who also now loves classical and opera music. If any of you ever try opera for the first time, be sure to let me know. But thank you so much for that wonderful review. If the show helps you at all, leaving a review like Pallid Bat did is one of the biggest ways you can give back to the show. If you would like to request an animal for a future episode, you can do so by going to relaxwithanimalfacts.com and clicking on the Submit and Animal Request tabs. To reach out to me, Steph Wolf, for any other reason, you can send an email to relaxwithanimalfacts@gmail.com, or you can send a message to relaxwithanimalfacts on Instagram. For an extra episode a week and ad-free and intro-free content, you can become a patron and be a part of our Patreon family. That is patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts, and the link is just a click away in the description. You can sign up for a free trial, and if you don't like it, it is all good. A huge shout out to George Flad for the ambiance in today's episode. His work is in the description and you should check him out. The facts used in today's episode came from nationalzoo.si.edu, africageographic.com, animals.sandiegozoo.org, and etimonline.com. What an amazing animal we have learned about today. The dwarf mongoose, a common creature, but an incredibly unique one, not to mention pretty adorable too. They are amazing communicators, have great family values, and have relationship dynamics that just have me scratching my head. I am so grateful that you have taken the time to join me on this adventure today, and I look forward to the next one with the next animal. Take care.